right, take three? Yeah, take three. This is the Angry GM, and this is me proofreading aloud an article entitled The Joy of Secrets. And as with the more recent proofread alouds, there will not be a supplemental Q&A because I'm recording this at a very off hour because I am stuck playing desperate catch up here. But anyway, enjoy nonetheless the proofread aloud The Joy of Secrets. Warning, this article is bullshit. No more than once a month, I let myself write a rambling, bloggy piece of stream-of-consciousness crap about whatever I want. I don't try to give practical advice, though there's always something to learn, or provide rules hacks, though I might preview one, and I can't promise well-organized arguments, sidebars, or even tiered headings, but they might happen. I'm just letting you into my head, and it's a friggin' mess in there. You have been warned. That, by the way, is now my standard disclaimer that will come at the start of all of my bullshit articles going forward. Just as there is now a standard disclaimer that comes at the beginning of all my true game mastery articles. Anyway, moving on. Guess what? I'm writing a role-playing game system of fantasy adventure. No, not that one, a different one. It's a long story that has to do with Wizards of the Coast's threat last month to screw content creators like me up, down, and sideways if we don't lick their boots, and my crazy and spiteful promise to write a lightweight but crunchy alternative to D&D for my high-tier supporters, and anyone else who wants to pay for it. I'm calling it the Slapdash Engine because I literally slapped it together over one long weekend and then threw the thing into an alpha playtest. After 3 weeks of turning frantic napkin scribbles into an actual playtest document. Meanwhile, I've been bragging to my secret inner circle about all the super cool features that will make Slapdash better than D&D and also every other fantasy RPG ever. And that's where today's story starts, with this brag. In Slapdash, anyone can cast divine spells, but only clerics get to know the actual divine spellcasting rules. Man, did that break a few brains. Maybe it just broke yours. If not, give it a second. Think about that statement. Wait for the obvious flaw to jump out. There you go. I can tell by that twitch in your eye and that spring noise you got there. Okay, that you got there. Okay. Nope. Let me try that again. Okay, let me try that again. Man, did that break a few brains. Maybe it just broke yours. If not, give it a second. Think about that statement. Wait for the obvious flaw to jump out. There you go. I can tell you spotted it by that twitch in your eye and that spring noise. Sorry. Anyway, that humble little brag about my awesome slap-together pile of crap RPG was the start of one hell of a roller coaster ride. One to do with the Monster Manual, secret lore, metagaming, and a rebellion against an evil cabal of game-mastering high priests. And today, I'm going to tell you why Slapdash Gods work that way, why it's okay for the players to read the Monster Manual, and that GM and why, I forgot the word why. And today, I'm going to tell you why Slapdash Gods work that way, why it's okay for the players to read the Monster Manual, and why GMs who custom make all their monsters to discourage metagaming are making their games worse, and everyone else's. I need to add that. And everyone else's, too. And next month, I'll tell you why you need the evil cabal of game-mastering high priests. Because treating GMs as a privileged caste worthy of respect and gratitude actually provides players with the best damn tabletop role-playing game experiences possible. But that's next month. Heading: The Secret Lore of Slapdash. In Slapdash, the fantasy adventure RPG coming this winter from Angry Games Incorporated, divine magic doesn't come in the form of spells clerics can sling. Rather, divine magic comes down from on high as blessings and curses delivered by the gods themselves in response to appeals, ceremonies, and sacrifices. All right, you got me. To some extent, that's just a bunch of window dressing. Divine spellcasting is just spellcasting, and the appeals, ceremonies, and sacrifices are just what other boring, crappy games call spell components. Except, in Slapdash, anyone can invoke a miracle. Any PC, or NPC for that matter, can beg the gods for help and have some chance of a response. They just have to do it blindly. The players of priestly characters actually get to see the divine spellcasting chapter of the book. Sort of. It's complicated. Wait for the full release, okay? Lots of my supporters thought that was a damned cool idea, and more than a few said that made a lot of sense for divine magic in a fantasy world. But a few of my supporters immediately tried to spot the trick. They knew there had to be a trick. They knew there had to be a trick. I couldn't mean what I said. How could I? Divine magic couldn't possibly work like that. Not for long, anyway. Suppose, for instance, that Slapdash really had a secret set of divine spellcasting rules that anyone could use blindly, but which players got to actually read when they made themselves a cleric. Even if you ignore the seemingly impossible mechanics that could possibly facilitate casting spells by blind guesswork, what prevents a cleric's player from just telling their allies the rules so everyone can cast divine magic more effectively? And what happens when a cleric's player retires their cleric and plays something else? Does the game include a standard issue neuralizer with which to erase their memories of the divine spellcasting rules? Now, my supporters have good reason to suspect some verbal smoke and mirrors. I'm tricksy. I never lie to them, but a lot of my truths are only true figuratively, or on some kind of technicality, or given a specifically narrow definition of one word or another. But in this case, I meant pretty much precisely what I said, notwithstanding a few minor details in execution and the translation of my designs into D&D-esque terms to make them easier to grok. The point is, yes, in Slapdash there are secret mechanics anyone can use, but only some players get to know right out of the gate. I think that's something a lot of fantasy adventure and role-playing video games do very well, and something tabletop role-playing games absolutely should find a way to steal. I'm a big fan. And the fact that secret mechanics don't stay secret forever, that's not a bug, it's a feature. It makes games better. And to explain my reasoning to my followers, I posed a simple and semi-rhetorical question. Is it okay for players to read the monster manual? And man, was that a mistake. Is it okay for players to read the monster manual? To be fair, that question wasn't a mistake until I took it to Twitter, which is par for the course. Twitter should dump its little bird mascot in flavor of a flaming garbage dumpster. I knew I was asking a loaded question, but one that's started fights since Eddie Gygax and Dave Arnoldson inventing gaming in the 50s. Especially the way I phrased it. Because my question isn't just about whether it's okay for players to act on information the GM didn't explicitly give them in play, the bullshit metagaming debate, but also about whether it's acceptable for players to purposely seek that information to get an edge in the game. To be fair, those were precisely the issues that I was trying to highlight regarding secret mechanics. Remember, the question was a way to start a discussion I could then end with a correct answer that justified my crazy-ass design decisions. Because I see myself as Socrates, and that's quite apt, as most of the internet sees me as corrupting gamers and ruining the community. Anyway, the answers I got ran the gamut, but I can summarize the vast majority of them thusly. Is it okay for players to read the monster manual? No, but I can't stop them. Yes, because I can't stop them. Yes, but my players know they can't use that knowledge in game. Yes, but they can't reference it during the game. Yes, because I render that information useless by never using published monsters as written. And you're an asshole. I'm not being facetious or hyperbolic with that last response. Outside of my supporter community, I got a lot of social media replies letting me know the question was offensive and stupid, and I was an absolute asshole for even asking it. And even though I had to interact with a lot of obnoxious, self-important assholes to get there, I did eventually find out what I'd done wrong. I'd identified myself as a member of the secret cabal of the High Priests of GMing, and I had to be destroyed. I shit you not. And even though the self-important, obnoxious dumbasses aren't interested in a well-reasoned response, I am nonetheless going to analyze that whole thing next month and explain why, yes, I am a member of the secret cabal of the High Priests of GMing, and we're the ones who run the best games that make players happiest. But I digress. Interestingly, I didn't get a lot of unqualified negative answers, but I also didn't get a lot of unqualified positive answers. Few people said yes outright, though admittedly some did, and several of those weren't really engaging with the issues at hand. And while you can suggest that sample or selection bias played a role here, and it undoubtedly did, the number of "you're an asshole" responses suggests sample bias wasn't as big a factor as it could be. The funny thing is, though, the majority of respondents can be divided into two broad groups. There were the people who thought only an asshole would ask such a question, and the people who wanted to say no but knew they couldn't. I mean, you had those sad, resigned GMs who clearly wish they could stop their players from reading the monster manual but know it's beyond their power, or who said, I'm fixing a thing, and then I'll come back and reread that little bit. Okay. I mean, you had those sad, resigned GMs who clearly wish they could stop their players from reading the monster manual, but know it's beyond their power. Or who said, look, I know I can't stop you, but at least don't do it right in front of me, please. But you also had the GMs who said, fine, they can read the monster manual all they want, but I'm going to stop them from benefiting from it in game. Let me try that again. But you also had the GMs who said, fine, they can read the monster. It should be you, because the other one was the GM addressing the players. Okay, let me try that 15th time. I mean, you had those sad, resigned GMs who clearly wished they could stop their players from reading the monster manual but know it's beyond their power, or who said, look, I know I can't stop you, but at least don't do it right in front of me, please. But you also had the GMs who said, fine, you can read the monster manual all you want, but I'm going to stop you from benefiting from it in-game. And special mention must be made of the dumbass idea that players shouldn't be allowed to metagame. That is, the idea players should be forbidden from using knowledge they have that the GM doesn't feel their character would have. If you hold that opinion, you're dumb. Not wrong, dumb. You are unreasonable, wrongheaded, and foolish. People's brains don't work like that, and you introduce more problems into your game than you avoid by trying to enforce that crap. I'd explain further, but I have better things to talk about, and frankly, I'm not sure you can grasp the argument. Grasp the explanation. And frankly, I'm not sure you can grasp the explanation. Anyway, obviously, sensible GMs recognize there's something about players reading the monster manual that doesn't sit right. And some of it's probably just down to fair play and earned victories. If you know what a monster can do, and you can come up with strategies to counter its tactics and exploit its weaknesses, you've got an advantage in the fight. And that's undeniably true. Good information is as empowering as a magical sword, a high-level spell, or a mechanical bonus. But magical swords and high-level spells and mechanical bonuses? Players have to earn those through play. They have to overcome challenges to loot magical treasure, they have to gain levels to get the best spells, and they have to come up with cunning plans and crazy capers to get situational bonuses. And that means that a player getting inside info about a monster is the same as a player writing magic sword plus two on their sheet between sessions and expecting the GM to let that fly. Information is valuable. All of us GMs know it. Personally, I think information is the most valuable, and I think that's good for the game. Discoverable secrets. Hopefully it's clear that I'm using the Monster Manual as a stand-in for any useful information the players can exploit in play. And the reason I'm using the Monster Manual is because D&D, and shamefully most tabletop role-playing games, lack examples of such information, which I'm going to call discoverable secrets. Apart from the magic item lists and the monster stats, there ain't a lot of useful, exploitable stuff hidden away for the players to discover later. And I think that's a shame. I'd love to see tons of shit hidden from new players' prying eyes. And that needs to be possessive. New players' prying eyes. My ideal player's handbook, crazy as this will sound, would show players nothing but the options they can start play with. High-level spells and abilities? Hidden. Prestige tier feats? Hidden. All but the most commonly known deities? Hidden. Uncommon, rare, and exceptionally rare magical items? Hidden. Hell, I'd hide rare races and classes too! I know I'm crazy, but hear me out. Tabletop role-playing game designers are inexcusably clueless about what discoverable secrets do for the fantasy genre and the fantasy adventure gaming experience. They don't realize what a terrible disservice they're doing to GMs and players by making everything so transparent. And most GMs are so clueless about this crap themselves that they're willing to destroy the value of what few discoverable secrets there are in their desperate scramble to stop players from cheating. Imagine if a major, modern, tabletop role-playing game publisher was so terrified of the relatively tiny problem of internet piracy that they absolutely refused to sell simple, transferable PDF copies of their rulebooks. Imagine if the only way you can access an electronic version of the rules was by being logged into and subscribed to specifically licensed platforms. That's what GMs are doing whenever they try to confound or forbid players from exploiting the knowledge they've got. If you change up your monsters to prevent players from using what they know, or if you exclusively use custom monsters, or if you forbid your players from using what they know regardless of how they know it, or if you never use the same monster twice in your campaign, you're as bad as WotC not selling PDFs, and you should feel bad. Fantasy adventure role-playing games should contain discoverable secrets. They make fantasy TTRPGs infinitely better. Fantasy adventure role-playing game players should be able to exploit discoverable secrets in play. It makes fantasy adventure role-playing games infinitely better. Fantasy adventure role-playing game players should share their discoverable secrets with each other. It makes fantasy adventure role-playing games infinitely better. Let me explain. Discoverability. Discover comprises one of eight major kinds of gameplay engagement. Discovery. Oh, I wrote that wrong. Discovery. Discovery comprises one of eight major kinds of gameplay engagement. It's one of the eight emotional experiences people play games to experience. And discovery is one of the core engagements of fantasy adventure gameplay. Discovery is a form of intellectual conquest. Discovery is beating back the darkness of ignorance. It's revealing the map. It's finding the hidden dungeons. It's understanding the world's secret backstory. And that's usually how we tabletop gamers think about discovery. But the most valuable, most powerful discoveries are the ones that make players more powerful. Discovery grants knowledge, and knowledge is a form of power. As you play The Witcher, you figure out which potions and mutagens and poisons work best against which foes and jive best with your playstyle. As you play Breath of the Wild, you learn how objects in the world interact with each other and how your runes interact with them, and how to use those interactions to solve puzzles and win fights. As you play Elden Ring, you learn enemy movesets and weapon animations, and you know when to block, when to parry, when to sidestep, when to use a strong attack, and when to panic roll the hell away as fast as you can. As you play Hollow Knight, you learn which charms do what and which you can combine to great effect, and you learn boss patterns so you know how to dodge and when to strike. Discovering mechanics is discovery too, and it's a more empowering, more joyful, longer-lasting kind of discovery. Yeah, it's great to see a dragon for the first time in Breath of the Wild or to ride that one elevator in Elden Ring, you know the one I mean, but discovering the dragon's spawn point, or discovering the dragons spawn at set times and places so you can farm them for armor upgrading scales and horns is a much more valuable discovery. Breaking through the Meridia tube was amazing once, but shine sparking was the gift that just kept on giving. World lore reveals and scenes of wonder are great. By all means, include them too. But they're not the same as getting a list of spells to choose when you level up and saying, I had no idea I'd be able to do something like that. And then experimenting with your unexpected power in your next dozen fights. To many players, discoveries about the game's mechanics are actually more rewarding and leave a longer lasting feeling of empowerment than discovering another dungeon on the map or another interesting fact in the world's rich historical tapestry. Such discoveries are empowering, and it's empowerment players feel like they earned. Utility. Discoveries aren't empowering if they're not useful. I hope that's obvious. Information you can't exploit doesn't make you feel more powerful. It's just a fun fact for you to file away. And that's why purposely redesigning monsters or custom building your own beasts destroys the value of discoverable secrets. You're rendering the player's knowledge of the game's mechanics null and void. You're robbing the discoveries of empowerment. One reason GMs can't see this is that they don't think beyond the campaign they're running, and they don't consider the big picture gameplay experience. The RPG experience ain't limited to a single adventure or campaign. It's something players do across numerous adventures and numerous campaigns for months or years. Lots of people have been playing D&D 5e for 9 years now. 9 years. And you can't ignore that long-term aspect of the play experience. Strategy and skill are essential game components. Games without elements of skill or strategy aren't games, they're activities. They're Candyland, they're slot machines. To qualify as a game, players must be able to affect the outcome with the quality of their choices. Moreover, players must get better at making better choices as they play. I know we don't like to talk about this shit as GMs. I know the concept of player skill is weird and icky, but we have to, because it's a central part of games being games. People who have played D&D for years should be better at playing D&D than people who just started. Put an experienced player and a newbie in the same fight with the same pre-generated PC. The experienced player should get his character through that fight without a scratch, and the newbie should barely scrape by. That's vital for long-term engagement and playability. If that ain't the case, then the only way to keep people around is to consistently introduce new, better options until the game's a bloated, overwrought, overpowered mess. And then it's time to throw your game out and make a new one. Players, not characters, are meant to play role-playing games for years. Role-playing game systems, not campaigns, are meant to provide years of fun. You can argue all you want that it's unrealistic for first-level characters played by longtime gaming vets to know more about the world and its monsters than newbies playing the same characters. Maybe it is, though every Greek citizen who went to the same play knew how to answer a riddling sphinx, and I know how to kill a vampire even though I've never met one. But honestly, realism is way, way, way less important than long-term engagement and investment. It's better for the long-term play experience, which is bigger than your tiny, crappy little campaign, if the players get to learn the ins and outs of the game and exploit the hell out of it. Community. When Hideo Miyazaki took a break from drawing animes to make one of the best action role-playing video games ever, Dark Souls, he recognized that, in the age of the internet gaming community, you could make a game totally friggin' inscrutable, and gamers would band together and scroot the hell out of it. He intentionally obfuscated Dark Souls, and Blood Souls, and Elden Souls. Okay. He intentionally obfuscated the hell out of Dark Souls, and Blood Souls, and Elden Souls, and all the rest, because he knew discoverable secrets unite communities like nothing else. He said so in interviews. People are communal by nature. They love drawing circles with themselves and their fellow insiders on the inside and outsiders outside. And because of inbuilt psychological limits on just how many members social groups can have, communalism is necessary, healthy, and pleasurable. People need a sense of belonging, but it ain't meaningful, and it doesn't feel good if it ain't earned. People who piss and moan about gatekeeping are idiots who don't know thing one about human social wiring, which is why everyone tries to keep them out. I ain't saying toxic communities don't exist, or that communalism can't turn toxic, but I'm saying that communalism isn't inherently toxic. Hell, it's a requisite for good mental and social health. Miyazaki totally understood that one of the best ways to build a gaming community was to give them a bunch of secrets to uncover and mysteries to solve. Let them build a collective body of shared knowledge. That's what human communities do best. If you don't like the Soulsborne games because you can't handle a challenge and you hate fun, look at how the Zelda community got together for years to figure out the incomprehensible timeline of the Zeldaverse. Of course, Nintendo, short-sighted dumbasses that they are, much like certain circle... Yeah. Of course, Nintendo, short-sighted dumbasses that they are, much like a certain circle of wizards who live on a certain coast, totally ruined that by publishing an official timeline to sell more overpriced hardbacks. Discoverable secrets and the sharing thereof unite communities, especially gamer communities. And like it or deny it, the role-playing gaming hobby is both social and communal. Need proof? Just visit friggin' Indianapolis one August. 100,000 people would not visit a god-awful place like Indiana just to play the same pretend elf games they could play at home if some serious communal forces weren't in play. You can't stop the message. Discoverable secrets, exploitable game mechanics that aren't shared directly with new players, enhance the tabletop role-playing gaming experience, both at the table and beyond. And they're a perfect fit for fantasy adventure, which is discovery-focused by its nature. Moreover, with the asynchronous nature of tabletop role-playing games, a single omniscient trustee hides behind the curtain and reveals the world to the players one session at a time, you'd think tabletop role-playing games would lean hard into discoverable secrets. They're perfect. So why don't game designers lean into them? And why don't GMs appreciate their worth? Worse, why do so many GMs actively sabotage them? Enter the perfect solution fallacy. It's impossible to stop secret info from spreading. You can't stop players from reading the Monster Manual and discovering all the secrets. Nor can you stop them from telling their non-cleric compatriots all the secret lore of the gods gleaned from their days at Pretend Elf Seminary. You can't stop players from acting on information that was that wasn't honestly gained through play. And even if you could stop all that, there's a small subset of players who also run games and GMs who also play games. And they're going to carry information across the screen. The fact that discoverable secrets can't be perfectly preserved and protected, and the fact that some people cheat, doesn't mean they're not damned valuable. Hell, people rip apart Soulsborne games and publish all their secrets practically the same day they come out, and that hasn't stopped the strongest gaming communities on the net from forming around the joy of discovering their secrets. GMs who forbid their players from acting on their knowledge of the game to prevent cheating, which is bullshit, by the way, are ruining the fun for everyone who came by their knowledge through honest effort and years in the table trenches. Same with GMs who constantly reskin or custom build new gacha monsters so their players can't use what they know from previous games. And they're not just hurting their own players, they're also hurting the communal experience of shared discovery for the sake of their tiny, petty, tyrant kingdoms. I meant what I said, and you should too. I was telling the truth about divine spellcasting in Slapdash. The details of deity worship in the Slapdashosphere won't be published in whatever passes for the Slapdash Player's Guidebook when it comes out. They'll be entrusted to the GM, probably on little player-friendly handouts with little disclaimers about sacred trusts and the joy of discovery they represent. Over time, the info will spread. Some foul cheaters will have all the handouts and use that information to their advantage. Most gamers won't. Spoilers will happen. And moderators in Slapdash Discord communities will probably have to adopt strict spoiler policies, just like in online fan communities for all sorts of other media. Over time, a body of shared Slapdash knowledge will form. I can't stop that. Hell, I'm hoping it does. Meanwhile, though, don't hamstring the discoverable secrets in your system du jour. You have no idea the value of what you're breaking. Understand that it is okay for players to read the Monster Manual, though they won't if they want the best experience, and you should probably tell your players so. Read it if you want, but you're ruining the fun for yourself if you don't. I don't care, though, because you're only ruining the fun for yourself, and that's not my problem. Beyond that, let your players use what they know. Even if you think so little of your players that you don't trust them to have come by their knowledge honestly. Stop with the no metagaming bullshit. Include plenty of challenges from books as written. From the published books. From published rule books. Okay. Include plenty of challenges from published rule books. As written. You can still build your own custom stuff too, but 2/3 of your challenges should come from the shared pool of communal knowledge. In short, stop screwing your players out of one of the corest of core engagements in the entire fantasy adventure gaming genre. If not for the sake of your players, then for the sake of mine. After all, one day one of your players might end up at my table or one of mine might sit at yours, and they shouldn't be screwed over just because they changed GMs. And if you can't abide these rules, absolutely don't buy Slapdash. I don't want you ruining it. Yeah, okay, I added that on the end. Okay, and if you can't abide these rules, absolutely don't buy Slapdash when it comes out. When it comes out. I need to add when it comes out. I'm being mean today. And if you can't abide these rules, absolutely don't buy Slapdash when it comes out. I don't want you ruining it for everyone, you petty little tyrant. All right, I am happy with how that ended, and I am happy with that read. Not really, that read was a mess, and I'm sorry for it. But it is a proofread aloud, and it is now done, and there will be another one in a couple of days, and then I will be caught up for the month, and hopefully we can go into March a lot more relaxed. Until then, thank you all for listening, reading, whatever, and talk to you soon.